Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, October 28th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, today we've got Jake Odorizzi on the podcast, a starting pitcher with a lot of years in the big leagues. And as I watched that game play out last night, I kept thinking, I can't wait to talk to Jake about this huge decision that everybody in the sport is talking about involving Blake Snell.
I was thinking the exact same thing. I wasn't a big fan of the decision, but I had a big old smile on my face thinking about Jake coming on and breaking it all down. So we have a good show for you all in store today.
Yeah, because Jake knows better than anybody the type of stuff that Blake Snell has. He used to pitch with the Rays. He knows their culture, and he certainly is going to give us background on that choice that everyone's going to be talking about all winter long. Rays, Dodgers, Game 6 of the World Series, the Dodgers leading 3-2. In the top of the first inning, the Rays took the lead.
Here's the 0-1 and a slider out there again, and a Rosarena pokes it to right field, and it's gone! Unbelievable! He took a slider off the outside corner, hits it the other way, and the Rays strike early on another home run by Randy Arozarena.
10 in the postseason, the most for any player in the history of baseball. He was absolutely terrific. When Blake Snell came out for the bottom of the first inning, it was clear he had great stuff. Fastball up to 97 miles per hour, command of his breaking stuff. He struck out Mookie Betts, Corey Seager, Justin Turner to start the game. Here was Blake Snell in the second inning against Cody Bellinger.
Here's the 0-2 to Bellinger. Chased a slider down and away, and Snell is mowing him down. Six batters, six outs, five strikeouts for Blake Snell.
And that would continue in the fourth inning against Seager, Turner, and Muncy.
Snell staring intently in towards the plate. And the pitch on the way, swing and a miss. Got him with a slow curve. And he strikes out Seager for the second time tonight. Oh, and Turner goes around at a curveball in the dirt. Picked up by Zunino, down to first. Turner fooled badly on that breaking ball. Eight strikeouts now for Snell. 3-2, swing and a miss. Another fastball. And for the second time tonight, Blake Snell has struck out the side. And he's done it against the best hitters the Dodgers have both times.
But that whole second time through the order, you're thinking in the back of your mind about the analytics, which say that if you leave a pitcher in the game to face a lineup a third time through, they're much more vulnerable. And you wondered if Snell would be pulled. Well, with one out in the bottom of the sixth inning, Austin Barnes singled, and then this is what happened.
Blake Snell will not face top of the order third time around. They saw what happened in the fifth inning. Snell is not saying anything, showing his displeasure, but he is showing his displeasure with a little shake of the head. He is not happy that he is out. He was fantastic tonight. But the Rays are sticking to their analytical guns, if you will, and that is bringing in a new arm third time through the order.
Now, Blake Snell did have something to say before Kevin Cash got to the mound to take the ball from him. He dropped a one-word profanity that was captured by Fox, and that will be seen throughout baseball history as people talk about this decision. Nick Anderson came in, and sure enough, it all unraveled for the Rays.
The set, and the 0-1 on the way, and it's blocked, but it bounces away from Zunino. Kicks away to his left, and in to score is Barnes. Betts comes to third, and the Dodgers tie it on a wild pitch.
Yeah, that was after Mookie Betts had doubled and Barnes had gone to third. So with that wild pitch, Mookie Betts was on third base.
And the 1-1 to Seager, a swing and a bouncing ball to first. Choi coming home, not in time. Betts slides in safely ahead of the throw, and the Dodgers lead 2-1.
Now, before the game, when we were speaking with Dodgers manager Dave Roberts, he told us that if the Dodgers had the lead, Julio Urias was going to be an option for him late in the game, and he certainly was in the top of the seventh.
1-2, and it's strike three called over the outside corner. Urias freezes Diaz with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, and the side is retired.
Now, in the eighth inning, Justin Turner was pulled from the game, and it wasn't entirely clear why that was. It was still 2-1 in the bottom of the eighth inning. Mookie Betts at the plate.
0-2 the count on Betts. And a swing and a ball driven. left center field. It's gone. Betts hits one into the Rays bullpen and extends the lead. The Dodgers now lead 3-1.
Just as Urias had blown through the Braves at the end of the National League Championship Series through those last three innings, he was terrific in the seventh, in the eighth, and now in the ninth.
The 0-2, and it's strike three called. Throws him with a fastball. Julio Urias gets the last seven in a row, and the Los Angeles Dodgers have won the World Series for the first time since 1988.
And after the game, Rays manager Kevin Cash was asked about his decision to pull Blake Snell.
Lineup the Dodgers feature is as potent as any team in the league. Personally, I felt Blake had done his job and then some. Mookie coming around for the third time through. I value that. I totally respect and understand the questions that come with it. Blake gave us every opportunity to win. He was outstanding. They're not easy decisions. And that's where I came to the decision. I felt it was best after the guy got on base. Barnes hit the single. Didn't want Mookie or Seager seeing Blake a third time.
He was asked effectively whether or not there had been a script in place before the game.
There was no set plan. As much as people think that sometimes, there's no set plan. This organization's tremendous about giving the staff the trust to make the in-game decisions that we feel is going to give us the best chance to win. And I totally respect that. What it unfolded today was pretty tough.
Here's Blake Snell's reaction.
I'm not going to question him. I mean, he's a hell of a manager, so I'm not going to question him. I'll voice my opinion, and yeah, I can only look forward to, you know, the offseason, what I'm going to accomplish this offseason to get ready to, you know, be the best me I can be for next year. But we came up short, and the only thing you can do from this point is get better and focus on what I can do to be better for next year. This year is over with. Congrats to the Dodgers. You know, they played better than us. And they earned it, so good job to them. But I want to be the guy that stays out there as long as I can and, you know, give this team the chance to win every ball game. And it sucks, you know, being pulled.
On SportsCenter, Cody Bellinger, speaking with Kenny Mayne, made no secret of the fact he was glad Snell was pulled.
I was shocked. I saw Kevin Cash from the dugout. I was right there. I literally looked to my left. I was like, what is going on? We're kind of joking around in the dugout. We're like, man, that way to get him out in the sixth. Like, that's what we wanted to do, get him out in the sixth. And I mean, we did that. We didn't hit him at all, but he was nasty today. He was on his A game. Kind of got up, looked in there. Mookie got a hit right away, and we just kind of took off from there and tried to take advantage of that opportunity.
Here's Dodgers manager Dave Roberts.
Pretty happy because he was dominating us, and we just weren't seeing him. So, you know, once Austin got that hit and they went to the pen, I think that Mookie looked at me with a little smile. We were just all kind of excited that Snell was out of the game.
Rays outfielder Kevin Kiermaier gave his opinion about Blake Snell.
He was dominating. I don't really care what the numbers say, third time through the order or whatever. There wasn't many guys making contact in general and no hard contact whatsoever. And coulda, woulda, shoulda, who knows what would have happened. But, you know, he threw the ball great. That might have been the best I've seen him. It was incredible.
Dodgers outfielder Mookie Betts talked about Dave Roberts and Clayton Kershaw.
Obviously, I'm super happy. I'm super happy just to win and be a part of some legacies. Doc has won one plan, and now managing. Kersh has been so close, and you know, there's so many knocks about him in the playoffs, but you know, he carried us, man. He pitched amazing, you know, through this whole playoffs. And I mean, we didn't score some runs a couple times, but what he did on the mound, what he's done on the mound for his career has been amazing. I'm just happy that I can be behind, you know, I can be on his team now instead of hitting against him.
At the moment that the final strike was registered, Clayton Kershaw was out in the Dodgers bullpen. You could see the relief on his face at that moment, and then he came running in with a big grin on his face. Here's Clayton Kershaw.
No, I can't yet. It's just I've been saying, you know, World Series champs in my head over and over again just to see if it'll sink in. And I can't put it into words yet. I'm just so very thankful to be a part of this group of guys. And so very thankful that we get to be on the team that is bringing back a World Series to the Dodger fans after 32 years. And they've waited a long time. And to get to do that, to get to be on the team that did that in L.A., you couldn't ask for anything more.
Corey Seager, by the way, hit a rare October double. He was named Most Valuable Player of the World Series after earning the honor for the League Championship Series. Now, after the game, Fox reported during the Dodgers celebration that Justin Turner had been pulled out of the game because he had tested positive for coronavirus. Later, Turner, who had been isolated initially from his teammates after he was pulled out of the game, was out on the field and actually part of team pictures and part of the celebration, at times not wearing his mask. Here's Andrew Friedman, the Dodgers head of baseball operations, talking about that.
I mean, obviously a lot of this, and I get the questions, you know, will be for another day. You know, I found out about it in the seventh inning, and, you know, it was extremely surreal, and, you know, obviously my mind was somewhere else, and then had to quickly adjust to what was happening. You know, obviously incredibly unfortunate, but, you know, kind of speaks to, you know, what all of us are going through in 2020. And then the post game, you know, I think having a mask on and staying socially distanced, he wanted to come out and take a picture with the trophy, which, you know, can't state strongly enough how big of a role he's played in this, the success of this organization. But, you know, I think for him, just being a free agent, not knowing exactly how the future is going to play out, I don't think there was anyone that was going to stop him from going out. I think, you know, from at least my perspective, and, you know, not watching it super closely with everything going on, but, you know, I think he was mindful of, you know, other people, especially other people that he hadn't already been in contact with. You know, this is something that we're going to wrap our arms around tonight and in the morning and figure out, you know, where we're going from here. You know, it was obviously a really unfortunate, you know, kind of end point of this incredible series, and definitely, you know, affected some of the joy from winning just because of how much JT has meant to us, and, you know, him not being able to be on the field for that final out with everything he's done for this organization. But, you know, it's something that is no one's fault. It's just how things played out, and, you know, we'll figure out exactly how to proceed going forward.
We'll be talking with Carl Ravitch about that coming up. But first, today on ESPN Daily, the LA Dodgers are your 2020 World Series champions after 32 years without a title. Jeff Passan breaks down their strange path to the title and the celebration afterward. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
And the Rabbit Train is parked for the offseason. Carl Ravitch, the host of Baseball Tonight last night. Man, I can't even imagine. What time did you get home? Like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning?
A little after 2, a little after 2 in the morning, but it was well worth it. And the finish line, it was great. It was great for the Dodgers, unfortunate for the Rays. But the season ended, which I know a lot of people were skeptical about once the season started.
Yeah, and put me at the top of the list. I'm the one who said 0% chance to finish the season, 5% chance. That was back in early July. And you give credit to everybody around baseball for making that work. It was bizarre at the very end with what happened with Justin Turner. We'll get to that in a little bit, Carl. But look, I was absolutely fascinated by the conversation that played out in-game last night about analytics and about decisions in baseball and about baseball as an entertainment product in 2020. You were sitting with Mark Teixeira and with Tim Kirchen as this game played out. What was their reaction? What was your reaction when Kevin Cash came out of the dugout after 73 right. pitches, after he struck out 9 of the first 18 hitters and called on Nick Anderson?
So through it and until that point, the hitter in the room, Teixeira, 400-plus homers, was talking about how the Dodger hitters, they had no idea. They were lost. They couldn't figure him out. His stuff was electric. And the idea that Betts and Seager and Turner were 0 for 6 with 6 strikeouts was an indication to him, you got to leave him in. That was one of the indications you got to leave him in. Others were his dominance, his demeanor, the crispness. So as we're watching it unfold, you know, one of the things, because there's so little action in Major League Baseball, when a ball is put in play, and more important, when it's actually put in play for a hit, somebody in our group is likely to say, we got action, we got action. So as soon as the ball was hit into right field, Mark said, we got action. And I said, no, we don't. We have a hit. And then Kevin Cash came out of the dugout. And as he's coming out of the dugout, Tim is facing or writing something down. And he says, no, he's going to go talk to Blake Snell. Tim didn't see him come out of the dugout. And at the same time as he's walking up the steps, you know, his right hand is raised, meaning I'm going to my reliever. He didn't see that. So then we had to say, no, he's going to get him. And he screamed, he can't be doing that. No, he can't be doing that. So, I mean, everybody was in agreement. I then began to text current and former managers around baseball. And the consensus from those was interesting. You know, obviously, this is the way that they do things, the Rays. They should have, at least in the opinion of these guys, because he is who he is and won a Cy Young and was pitching so well, there are certain players who don't fall onto the script page, and they considered Snell to be one of them. What I found interesting was when I asked one of them, I said, so does the 0 for 6, 6 strikeouts as you turn the lineup over for the third time mean anything? You know what the answer to that question was? No, it means nothing. And I was shocked. But wait a minute. So I got a hitter here who says, I don't know what the hell's coming out of his hand. I can't figure it out. Just because he struck me out twice doesn't mean I'm going back to the bench and figuring out exactly what it is that he's doing. So the third time up, I'm going to get a hit. He said, of course not. I need to get him out of the game. And Mookie Betts echoed the same thing, et cetera. But I was stunned when the answer to that question was, nope, doesn't mean a thing. That's not the reason you would leave him in or take him out. And I figured it that needs to be at least part of the thought process. And the answer was no. I was stunned. And obviously, here's the terrible dynamic that exists. If you don't subscribe to analytics sort of wholly like the Rays do, then you end up almost wanting the plan to backfire to justify your position. And that's terrible. That's awful. But I'm sure there were so many people out there who were saying, oh, my God, I'm so angry. I'm so pissed. I hope this doesn't work. And that's a terrible position for a fan to be in, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. And I want to underscore what you said. You've said it twice. I think it bears repeating. Mookie Betts, former MVP, Corey Seager, League Championship Series MVP, World Series MVP, Justin Turner, incredibly accomplished hitter, 0 for 6 with 6 strikeouts. These are guys who were not striking out during this postseason. That's how dominant Snell was. Now, I would say this, you know, after the game, I really respect Blake Snell, who took a lot of crap for stuff that he said during the shutdown. How, while he made it clear that he wasn't happy with the decision, he told reporters, look, if you guys are going to, I'm paraphrasing, if you guys are going to write bad things about him, remember, he got a lot of decisions right during the year. And you 100%. And I would agree. Kevin Cash is an excellent manager, but that last night just made me shake my head. I thought it was a wrong decision in the moment. And Carl, it definitely, at the moment that came in, you know, you were sending texts. I must have had 40 texts drop in from people around the sport saying, what is going on? Our sport is an embarrassment. What are we thinking about? Because those analytics are based on things that happened in the past, and they're not based on what was happening on the field last night. And that was that he was totally dominant. And oh, by the way, if you want to say, well, the analytics say that after 50 pitches, Blake Snell's numbers go way down. Look at what the analytics said about Nick Anderson in recent weeks. He has not pitched well, you know. So I do believe that this is going to kick off or fuel a larger conversation that really has started this year about whether or not this has all gone too far with the adherence to the numbers, Carl.
Well, I think like any aspect of life, I mean, the one word that you hope to apply is moderation. And I think in some camps, there has been some moderation, some move back to the middle where, you know, we once were told analytics is wholly the future and every decision that is made is going to be based on the numbers. And in some cases, I think we've seen, and maybe it's a throwback like Dusty Baker. Maybe it's a David Bell saying, you know what, Bauer's really doing well. We're leaving him in spite of what the analytics might say. There's got to be some moderation. A loyal marriage to analytics guiding every decision would be akin to when you walk outside and there's ice on the ground and all the numbers are saying it's okay to walk on them. And there's this instinct in you that says, even though it's only 33 degrees, I think it might be frozen. I'm not going to take that chance. There's got to be some moderation to look at the situation, as you said, and apply it. And maybe there are just certain players who you've got to give a longer leash to. But the same way that you made reference to Nick Anderson had given up a run in seven straight games. So if that's the option you're going to go to, just because it says that that's where it's written down in the script, Nick Anderson is next. I mean, you do have to realize he is struggling. As great as he's been in the past, he has allowed a run every time he's come into the game recently. That doesn't feel like it's the, you know, it's the right bridge to cross. It's a little weak. We can't take that risk. And the longer leash that Kevin Cash and the Rays, and it's so hard, you almost have to lump Kevin Cash in with the front office and the analytics department. I don't believe that Kevin Cash, and he can correct me, and maybe I'm wrong, I just don't believe that he's making that decision in a vacuum. I think he's got all sorts of help, and it's a group think, and it's a group decision. So I would say that Kevin Cash and the front office and analytics department gave a much longer leash to Tyler Glasnow than Blake Snell, and not once did Tyler Glasnow look as dominant as Blake Snell did. That was another one that we had a hard time wrapping our heads around. Why is he throwing 112 pitches and the other guy's only allowed to throw 73 when he looks like the Cy Young winner of 2 years ago and the other guy is bouncing the ball to the plate half the time?
Yeah, and I, you know, feel like I should say this too about Kevin Cash. I listened to his post-game press conference when I was doing radio last night, and he was excellent in answering the questions because he not only gave his rationale, but he said repeatedly, "Look, I get the questions. I understand why people would wonder about that." So I respect that he was doing that. He also said that it wasn't scripted, and my response to that would be, if I saw him today, would be, "Well, then you're a complete idiot," because if it wasn't scripted, Kevin, what were you watching? Because he was so good. And part of me, again, to go back to 30,000 feet, you know, last night, Blake Snell, I know what the expectations may be for the Rays front office and for Kevin as the game started, where, okay, we think that, you know, after 50 pitches, the numbers go down. We're going to get him out two times through the order. He could have had last night a Sandy Koufax, Bob Gibson type game because he was pitching above where he has. I mean, he was that good. He could have had those moments, and instead, the entertainment value of that game went away. And you think about Madison Bumgarner in 2014, the greatest postseason of any pitcher ever. Can you imagine if Bruce Bochy had been adhering to the analytics? First off, the Giants wouldn't have even gotten to the World Series. Madison Bumgarner certainly would have had the, wouldn't have had those moments. He wasn't going to, he wouldn't have let him finish his start in game five, and he would never have brought him in relief in game seven. And yet that's what we're always going to remember about that. And the fact that that sacrificed in adherence to the numbers, that's not a good thing for the baseball product, Carl.
No, of course not. So let me ask you this, Buster. If, in fact, after the Barnes single into right field, which was hit at 91 miles an hour, wasn't a hard hit ball, if, in fact, Snell doesn't come out and Mookie Betts hits a home run, is your first thought he should have taken him out?
No. No, absolutely not. I mean, my own feeling is, because I always talk in the podcast about how it seems like that a lot of the judgments of the managers are viewed through the prism of the results versus what you're actually seeing. I would have, if Mookie Betts had hit a home run, I would have said, you know what, based on how he was pitching, that was the right decision to leave him in the game.
Of course. Which is, that's why I asked you that question. And there was nothing about the Blake Snell performance or even the hit that went into right at 91 made you think he's tiring, his stuff isn't good, and Mookie Betts is coming up, so we can't risk having that guy. I mean, Blake Snell, at whatever stage he was in with regards to what's left in the arm, would be better to me than any guy coming out of the bullpen, at least for the foreseeable future. The next 1, 2, 3, I haven't got any empirical evidence that his stuff is diminished at that point. Just because we had a hit. Like, we didn't have action. We don't have base runners. We had a base runner. He got a hit. The number 9 hole hitter has been destroying the postseason. So be it. They're all good hitters. He got a hit. I just found it stunning that one of the pushbacks was, well, if Betts had been allowed to hit a homer, he would have been crucified. Like, by who? Like, that's, you know,
nobody.
This is part of our culture, man. There are two very distinct ways to look at everything. You're either in one camp or the other, and I'm hoping that these types of behaviors and actions lead to moderation. Like, and look, Buck Showalter, to his credit, has been one of those guys who I think initially was a little reluctant to go whole hog on analytics. I think he's moved to recognize the value of it, and there also must be a balance. Joe Maddon's a big balance guy. And maybe that's why Joe Maddon is in Los Angeles and not Chicago anymore. You just wish that there's got to be some part of the narrative that allows you to think, to react. I think Alex Cora is a reactor. We saw that with Eovaldi. I understand the situation dictates a lot of these decisions, but as you said, so does instinct, so does eye test, so does feel. And I just felt like there was no consideration for feel, for what you're seeing, for what your gut says. All that stuff is wonderful and it's sentimental, but it means crap when you have the numbers that back it up. And I don't like it.
And the reaction of the Dodger players after the game when they were asked about Snell being taken out tells you everything. Like, they were holding a dance party in the Dodgers dugout. Look, I want to ask you about Justin Turner, but two quick ones before we get to that. Give me a quick thought on Clayton Kershaw winning the World Series. Give me a quick thought on the Dodgers, Dave Roberts breaking through.
You know, it was great because one of the conversations we had last night was, prior to the game, who is the win? Who's the World Series ring more important to and for? Is it Clayton Kershaw or is it Dave Roberts? The player, Mark Teixeira, and Tim asked this question. The player said Clayton Kershaw right away. And I said Dave Roberts. Because in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, and I'll get you why the player said it, text, but in my opinion, Dave Roberts needs this to me more. Clayton Kershaw's done, to me, everything he needs to do. He's a Hall of Famer. I'll always look at him as somebody that we covered for 25 years as one of the best pitchers we've covered, top five pitcher we ever covered. Whether he, in my opinion, has a World Series ring or not, it doesn't justify my feelings about him, where I would rank him at all. I think in Teixeira's case, it's important for a player to have played a career and won a ring. It does validate. It does justify. It does allow you to be announced as, multiple Cy Young winner, and he also won a World Series. That's a huge box to check. It's critical, I think, in the player's mind. And for me, Dave Roberts and the sort of dispensability of managers you're going to come and you're going to go, and it's going to be very quick, because as we saw last night, none of those real decisions are yours and yours alone like they were in the past. So Dave Roberts, literally, if he lost that, some would say he should have been fired. I would not be one of them, but he should be fired. So he's now never going to get the chance with Los Angeles again to win a World Series. He's now got one. You know, he could be fired in 2 years. Who knows? But he's leaving with a ring, and I think that's really, really important. And maybe the most important guy to ask would have been Roberts. He's got a ring as a player. Now he's got one as a manager. Which one means more? I bet he says the player.
Yeah. No question. All right, let's talk about Justin Turner. What was your take on how that played out last night?
Well, it was a disaster. I mean, that literally is like running a race, finishing first in the Boston Marathon, and then acknowledging, well, I took a trolley for 14 of the 26 miles. But like, there's something so painful about seeing that, something so egregious, something that's so violating of other people's rights and feelings and opinions. The idea that somehow you can put this above everyone else who made all these unbelievable efforts and screw it. You know what? We made it. And now I'm going to go out there, and if it gets me or anyone else, I'll be okay with it. There is there is no justification. I think I read a comment from Andrew Friedman. No one was going to stop him from coming on the field. Everyone should have stopped him from coming on the field. And I don't care. I hope nobody else gets infected. But the idea that we're introducing the possibility, and we seem to be, because we managed to get through this fight together, it's okay to lower our guard down just for the moment of a picture. That's garbage. And I know that he was told by Major League Baseball to isolate, and ultimately security had to come and get him. Are you crazy? It colored the whole thing from Dodger blue to Dodger black and blue.
Boy, we've always heard through history that baseball is emblematic of what's going on in this country, and I think never more so than last night, right?
100%. I mean, I just, and again, it was, you hear it, you see it post game, and you're like, oh God, is that, I mean, so they found out in the second that there was a possible positive. Then they find out later in the seventh. You couldn't have found out the result quicker. Even if there was a question, don't you pull his butt out in the second inning? Again, because of where we are, because of the uncertainty, because of the level of contagion that this virus presents, there are many who walk on eggshells and are so anxious about it. And then there are others who seem to, and this is emblematic of the country, and there are others who seem to say, you know what, I'll deal with it if I get it. It's not a big deal. And that literally played out last night on our television screens at the end of a World Series.
Unbelievable. Well, so 2020. All right, Ravi, thanks for doing this. Thanks for all your help during with the podcast this year.
My pleasure. Love the Buster Only podcast. Been a pleasure. And let's hope that when we reconvene in March and April, we're playing baseball and we have people that are in the seats to watch it.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit
to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Jake Odorizzi has pitched in the big leagues for a long time. He was a 2019 All-Star for the American League. And, Jake, I was so happy last night as I was watching Game 6 of the World Series play out that I was going to have you on the podcast today, because you can describe far better than I ever could, first off, what you saw during the game. And you could certainly be in a position to talk about the decision that everybody's going to be talking about, not only today, but I really think all winter. Tell me this for starters. Tell me what you saw in Blake Snell as a pitcher in the first four or five innings of this game.
Just pure dominance. I mean, the top three guys in the lineup didn't make contact the first, all that he saw him. I mean, he punched him out every at bat. When you can take those top three guys and go 0-for-6 with six strikeouts, I think that gives you a pretty good indication of what type of stuff that he was working with that day. He looked like he was in the moment. He was amped up for it. The stuff was phenomenal. And he was pitching on top of having electric stuff, which that's a deadly combo. So he was more than ready for the opportunity that was ahead of him. And man, as a pitcher, those are the games where you want 100 plus pitches because you know you have your great stuff. So I know we all got a close up of his reaction as he was being taken out. And I feel that is completely warranted. I think Mookie said it best after the game, like, it almost did them a favor, like, thank you for taking him out, because he had complete game Cy Young Blake Snell type of stuff yesterday. So that's the part that, you know, I guess the analytical data doesn't, you know, you can't factor that in. It's the eye test was off the charts yesterday, and I wish it would have been factored in a little bit more, but that's what the Rays do. That's what they built their model on. And, you know, even with that backfiring yesterday, I can guarantee you that no matter what, that still fits their model of working more times than not, because that model is run over, you know, thousands and thousands of times to get those results. So one game doesn't really sway it one way or the other, which is, you know, crazy, especially when it's an elimination game like that.
Real quick, following up on Blake and his stuff last night, what jumped out to me was, I mean, there are times when I've seen a pitch when it feels like he's spraying the ball over the place. He's not necessarily, in the strike zone. It seemed like everything he was throwing last night, each of his pitches, he's able to throw for strikes.
Yeah, and that's the big key with him. I mean, his stuff is off the charts. It's just being able to harness it and keep it in the zone. And he was doing a phenomenal job of that. I think, like, honestly, the first bite of the game was a good indication of what was to come. Like, the way he punched out Mookie, who's seen him a ton over his years in Boston, and he strikes him out on a nasty changeup in the zone. And that's the big thing with him too, is, you know, he gets swings out of the zone, but when he gets swings and misses in the zone, that's a good tell of how a pitcher's stuff is that day, especially on such a good offense like that. So that's probably the best that I've seen him. I play with him for a little bit of my time in Tampa, but just watching him and seeing how composed he was and the execution that he was putting out there, it was, I'm coming right at you. His pitch count was super manageable, and that's probably one of the best outings I've ever seen him throw on the biggest stage.
So I can tell you this, in doing the game on ESPN Radio last night, I think it was about the fourth or fifth inning when Dan Shulman and Chris Singleton, Jessica Mendoza, began to have the conversation of, will they really take him out? Will they really take him out two times through the order? Because that's typically what they've done. We all know the numbers, built up over the course of the regular season, that after 50 pitches, the results weren't as good. They were, you know, of the mindset of, look what's happening in front of you. Like, look at what his stuff is. Now, you as someone who played with the Rays and you understand them a lot better than any of us do, what were you thinking as he's going through that lineup a second time? And were you anticipating that they would make that move?
I wasn't anticipating it, just because, like, what was it, the Glasnow game where he threw 112 pitches in 4 2/3 innings?
Like, right.
That counteracts everything that goes into that decision. But I know from my time there was different degrees of what the charts would say. So if you were losing by one, you were more likely to get more pitches. But if you're up by one, you were less likely, which, you know, doesn't exactly sit too well as a pitcher, because the days that you have your best stuff, you haven't given up a run yet and your team is winning. Like, it's a pretty good formula for what's going on right now. So, you know, I've been in his shoes before. I've, you know, obviously been in that organization, but we did make the World Series when I was there. But it's frustrating as a pitcher because, you know, sometimes the data is not irrelevant, because that's what got them there. Like, let's be honest, there's a lot of things that they do and they do really well that got them at this point. But just as you're saying, like the eye test in that situation, especially when, you know, nothing against Nick Anderson or anything like that. Like, he was having some difficulties in the postseason with, you know, coming in and giving up some runs. And I think he admitted after the game he was getting pretty gassed. And, you know, that's the thing that I think formulas don't factor in, is those formulas are built on the guy coming in behind you is a healthy, fully rested reliever. And that's why those numbers usually shade to the reliever. Whereas, this is game six of the World Series, you've had no off days for your bullpen. You've been using the same guys game after game, and that those guys aren't going to be as fully rested or maybe as fully sharp as they normally are. So that in itself throws that model off. But when you still follow it the same, it's the computer doesn't, you know, change tiredness to healthiness. It's always under the assumption the guy behind you is healthy and rested. So, you know, that I've been on teams that you have a starter on the other side that absolutely dominating, and they go to the pen and you feel a relief because, like, oh gosh, thanks for taking that guy out. We had no chance against that guy. And it just seemed like it was an immediate reaction yesterday. Mookie doubles at second and third, and then, you know, one batter later, they're winning the game. Like, that's the epitome of how that all played out in such a short time span.
I thought that Kevin Cash and Blake Snell handled the situation with the media as well as you possibly can. Blake made it clear he wasn't happy, but he also, as I was telling Carl Ravitch, mentioned to reporters, look, if you're going to write something bad about Kevin, you know, also note all the times where they made the right decision. And Kevin, I thought, was terrific because he explained his rationale, but he acknowledged that there's another side to it, and he gets that side of it. My question going forward, and I'm not in a position to answer this the way that you would, again, because you know the culture of that team, and you've talked in the podcast in the past about how the Rays are an organization that value culture. I worry about a decision like this sort of festering into the future. What do you think?
I do too, so to a certain extent. Knowing both of them, I'm sure they will have a sit down and talk it out. I mean, that doesn't help the situation, you know, fully. You're still going to be, you know, the what ifs are going to be looming for a long time. And just like you said, this is going to be one of the more talked about decisions of any World Series for months to come, who knows, years to come, whatever it may be. But I thought they both handled it very well. And I thought it was big of Cashy to admit after the game that he had some regrets about it. I mean, that goes to show you there that it wasn't an easy decision. And it's not a decision that, you know, they went with what they've been doing that got to that point. I understand that. And I think he understands that too. So I think, you know, kudos to both sides for not, you know, throwing each other under the bus, whatever it may be. But I do think that there needs to be a conversation between just those two and talk out exactly what they're thinking. Cause it's good as a pitcher to get that off your chest, because that's the last thing you want to do is go into the offseason and keep holding that in. And Cash is one of those managers that he is absolutely okay with you coming in and having a discussion with him. I had discussions when I was there with him, and he welcomes that because that's productive for that culture. And to be able to go talk to your manager and express your displeasures, whatever it may be, little things like that, that's what builds, you know, good team chemistry. And for Snell, as a, you know, a potential longtime leader of that team, I think it's important for him to do that for his own sake and not hold any grudges. I know it's easily done right now because it's so high in the emotions, but I really hope that for their team's sake and for their sake, they can have that conversation just to, you know, maybe close the book on it all and move forward the best they can, and, you know, in due time.
And you know, looking at this from 30,000 feet, last one for you. You know, you and I have talked about my opinion that baseball really needs for entertainment value to restore the preeminence of starting pitchers. You know, as I was watching that play out last night, you know, anticipating that, yes, at some point he probably is going to be taking out. What I was thinking was, you know what, Sandy Koufax, 1963, struck out 15 guys. You know, Bob Gibson, 1968 World Series, he strikes out 17. Madison Bumgarner, 2014. All of those type of performances would not be possible. All those things that people remember about the sport would not be possible. And I have heard a lot of off the record complaining in front offices about where the analytics are taking the game as an entertainment product. How do you feel about that?
I couldn't agree more with you. You know, I'm probably a little more biased just because I am a starting pitcher, but you look at the Nationals, you know, last year, their starting pitching carried them throughout the postseason. And as a starter, you set the tone for the whole game. You give your bullpen needed rest. You give your team that boost. I'm sure everybody in that dugout yesterday was on Blake Snell's back. Like, he just said, I'll take care of this. Like, this is, even in his first start, he did extremely well against them. And, you know, they are one of the premier offenses. And for a team to have confidence in that starter going out there, it does something to you as a player because you're behind them. They took the lead. And I bet you, you know, 9 out of 10 guys in that dugout, if Snell was still on the mound, thought 1-0 would do it for him that day, because that's the type of, you know, performance he was putting on. And to be cut off on that, that's where starting pitching is so important. Those extra outs, be it, you know, he was in the sixth inning, that's great, but he still only had 70 pitches. The more outs you can get, the better it is. Like, you know, you're shortening the game, and if that's your best chance to win, you let him ride out. And that is what they should have done in that situation. Obviously, you know, we can look back on it now, but it just seemed like it gave life to the other side. And that's what starting, like, mismanaging of starting pitching, or I get the thought of, you know, you'd rather take a guy out one batter too soon than one batter too late. But in that instance, that's not it. But that's where starters are so important, because they can give you that length. And if you have a tired bullpen and you get that type of performance in an elimination game, he's probably your best option until you get till the eighth or the ninth inning, whatever it may be. So it definitely slows the game down on top of that, because you're making pitching changes left and right after that. And you took away, there's a lot, I'll use this saying I like to say from time to time, like, there was a lot of glory left on the table for Blake Snell right there. Like, he could have had one of those performances you were just talking about, like a 13-14 punch out game in a World Series game. That doesn't happen all the time. So that's something that deprives fans of a great performance, and, you know, potentially the Rays of forcing a game seven.
Yeah, against one of the great lineups that we've seen too. You know, the Dodgers being such a great offense and being completely dominated the way that they were. Jake, thanks so much for your help during this entire postseason. It's been a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. I had fun doing it. It's good to still be in tune with the game and sitting here on the couch watching it, get to break it down. So love talking baseball, and glad that you were able to have me on weekly and talk everything out.
Numbers game.
Sarah Lang's a reporter and producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, I'll give you a whack at the question everyone's been talking about since the middle of last night's game. Blake Snell being pulled from the game despite striking out half of the hitters that he faced. What'd you think when it happened?
Yeah, you know, my biggest concern when it happened was that I was not, for the Rays and for their own sake, thrilled to see Nick Anderson walking in. I mean, Nick Anderson, we've talked about him. I think we had him on some of our greatest reliever lists that we've done, like, in the last 2 years, or best pitches. He hasn't been that pitcher in the postseason. During last night, he'd allowed a run in 6 straight appearances, which was already a record for a reliever in a single postseason. So I had the same feeling last time he was brought in a situation like this, and it didn't blow up for the Rays, but you just felt like something was going to happen. And I understand how the Rays operate, and we've talked about this so much this postseason since they made it so far and we're on the big stage. But I do think that, you know, Mookie hadn't gotten a hit off of Snell in this World Series. And I know that Mookie has hit him well previously. He was 0-for-4 against him. He had a couple of strikeouts. It seemed like you could let him face at least that last batter.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 717. So the Dodgers had a 717 winning percentage in the regular season. That's the second highest by a World Series champion, behind only the 1909 Pirates, who wanted a 724 clip. And of course, the Pirates played 154 games. The Dodgers only played 60. We'll never know what would have happened if they played 162. But that was a 116 win pace. And they're the seventh team in the wildcard era to win the World Series with a share of the best record, first since Mookie's 2018 Red Sox.
Number two
is 434. So speaking of Mookie, that's how far his insurance run eighth inning home run went last night. It's tied for the fifth longest homer he's hit, tracked by StatCast, and it was his longest since September 2019. You know, what a moment, biggest stage, all of that. And of course, he's done this before. He also homered in Game 5 in 2018, which was the game where the Red Sox clinched the World Series. So he's one of nine players to homer in multiple World Series clinching wins, along with Babe Ruth, Reggie Jackson, Bill Skowron, Frank Robinson, Tommy Henrik, Joe DiMaggio, Bill Dickey, and Yogi Berra. And he and Reggie Jackson are the only ones to do that for multiple teams. And the record for World Series clinchers homered in is 3 by Ruth and Jackson. So we know how much longer Mookie Betts is going to be in LA. We know how good this team is. So maybe we see him homer in another World Series clinching win at some point.
Number one
is 19. This is one of my favorite stats I looked up this year. So Clayton Kershaw played in 19 postseason rounds before the 2020 World Series. That is the most postseason rounds played in before winning a World Series by anybody ever. Think of the Clayton Kershaw narrative, all that we've seen him go through. Yes, this is a product of the wildcard era. There are more rounds, but that's the point, right? When you went through all these trials and tribulations, if you think of the 50s Dodgers, it was just one series. Kershaw has been playing so many times in the postseason, and now he finally won it. And Kenley Jansen, by the way, is second on that list with 16. And it is worth noting that there's one player who played in that many or more rounds and never won. This is only what I said for Kershaw is for guys who then did win their first title. Kenny Lofton played in 20 postseason rounds, never won a title. That is the most rounds played in for someone who never eventually won.
That is a great number for sure. What did you think of the choice for World Series MVP?
You know, it's hard not to get sentimental watching everything, right? I think that the right guy won it. I mean, Corey Seager was absolutely outstanding the entire postseason. The award's just for the World Series. He was really good in the World Series. He hit 400. He slugged like 7-something. But, you know, I'm sure there were people sitting at home who wanted it to be Clayton Kershaw. I think we needed to see a little bit more from Kershaw. I know there are things he did that usually lead to a World Series MVP for a pitcher, but I just think it's tough when you don't pitch in that final game. That tends to skew it. When Strasburg won last year, I'm pretty sure there was something about he might have been the first since like 2001 to win World Series MVP as a pitcher and not pitch in the final game.
Yeah, I think that if there had been a game 7 and he'd come out of the bullpen to get an out, then I think he would have won that. But you're right. I think he needed just a little bit more. And Corey Seager was so ridiculously good. I, you know, mentioned during the season that I was texting back and forth with Dave Roberts back during the summer camp. And I asked him some questions about Seager. And he said he's going to be the MVP. And he was referring to the regular season. He thought he was healthy and he looked like he was killing the ball. And he thought he was going to have a big breakout. And Dave was wrong. And the MVPs came in the League Championship Series and the World Series. I'm sure he's happy about that. All right, Sarah. Thanks again. Thanks, as always, for all your help during the year.
Thank you so much for having me, Buster. And thank you for everything. I think that, you know, there was a lot to this season, but I'm so glad we got a season and everything played out.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday. First up, we have Aaron at Aaron San Diego. He writes in, thank you for all the great pods and sticking with the season from the beginning. I've listened to the pod for years, but this year I needed it daily more than ever. Thank you to all the guests for being there when we needed you the most. Thank you, AA Ron San Diego, for listening, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks to all the listeners. I mean, we've talked in the past about how our numbers are up. We just got a note the other day that from last September to this September is what, up 19%. Mm-hmm. We have just gotten such great responses from listeners, such, you know, great Bleacher tweets with listeners being a part of the show every single day. It really has been remarkable, despite the fact that we had so long, Taylor, without actual games.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. It's not the season I was certainly expecting to walk into. You know, I talked to Josh, I talked to Troy about how to handle a daily show. I'd never really done it before, and man, that stretch to start our little run here, and then to get into this wild season, it was a good time. Thanks for listening, everyone. We very much appreciate it.
Yeah, one quick thing before you go on to the next comment that we're gonna get. So today we're doing the podcast about game 6 of the World Series, everything that happened last night. Tomorrow we'll have one more podcast with our regular daily podcast, and we'll be looking ahead to the offseason. And it is going to be a strange and interesting offseason for sure.
Absolutely. Next up, PK Steinberg. He writes in for both Buster and Taylor, one word to define and describe 2020 baseball. What is it for you, Buster?
I'm going to borrow the word from our friend Joe Panic, who came on the podcast. Weird. Like, the whole year was weird from beginning to end, right? What about you?
I would say overreaction, because everything was so, it was such a short season that everything that happened, we thought it was like this big thing. You know, the Yankees get out to a hot start, then you got Tatis on fire. My Orioles had a playoff sweat for 2/3 of the season. And then in the end, it was the teams that we did not overreact to. It was the Rays and the Dodgers, who we thought would be there all along. So that's how I would frame it. Next up, we got Nathan at GNilly97. Buster, how in the world was Mookie Betts not the MVP? He owned the series and the playoffs overall.
Nathan, I think you can make a case for Mookie Betts. I think Corey Seager was the best player. He was unbelievable during the World Series and during the whole championship run.
Last one for today. Kyle Benning at Kyle_Benning writes in, as a baseball fan, I feel cheated. We were watching one of the greatest left-handed pitching performances in World Series history, something I'd tell my grandkids about, and it was cut short and taken away from us. Moves like this is why baseball is losing viewers. Buster, do you feel a little bit vindicated from your stance that you've kind of taken on the analytics and seeing Blake Snell being pulled?
No, I don't feel vindicated. I would say this. I do think that it's going to launch baseball into a winter in which there's going to be a lot of conversation about this, because a lot of people feel the same way that you do, Kyle, where they feel like that the pure entertainment of it is something that is being forgotten. You know, as that game was going on last night, I got in my head, well, 1963, Sandy Koufax struck out 15, and Bob Gibson in 1968 struck out 17, and you thought, you know, potentially you're seeing that type of performance, but in the back of your mind, you're also thinking, you know what, they're going to take the ball away from him. Taylor, I didn't get your opinion on this, on the decision to pull him out of the game.
Oh, absolute tire fire. What is Kevin Cash doing? And I wonder if this is going to maybe breed, because it's going to be such a big, it's going to be one of those big narratives, man. Is this going to breed maybe some contempt for the, especially for the Rays players and the front office? And I probably not for Kevin Cash, because he has pulled the right strings all season, but I feel like there could be a weird something going on. What do you think about that?
No, I don't think so. Because let's face it, they always draw from the fringes of baseball anyway, because they don't really have a lot of money. So, you know, you think about a guy like Nick Anderson, who sort of had this unusual journey to the big leagues. If a guy in his position gets an opportunity pitching the big leagues with the Rays, of course he's going to take it. I don't think, it's not like you're going to have superstar players saying, I don't want to play with the Rays, because the Rays aren't going to be the team that offered the contract anyway.
Good point. All right, everyone, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Send in a few more for our last show tomorrow in terms of daily episodes. And please subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. And when we return some point in the offseason, it'll magically appear on your phone.
All right, that's it for today. My thanks to Jake, to Carl, to Sarah, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.